Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, October 3rd, 2018. The head of the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission bids farewell to South Sudan.
Let us forget the past and concentrate on the future. I am very hopeful that the revitalized agreement, which is more inclusive for one thing, and where a number of all the sticking issues were openly discussed.
And a group of young South Sudanese are trying to feed street children in Juba.
And the donation is coming from the Bitcoin Cash community. We get this Bitcoin, we sell it first to Ugandan company called Coinbase. And then they buy these coins and then they deposit our money to mobile money.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The outgoing head of the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, the body tasked with monitoring the implementation of South Sudan's peace agreement, is calling on the parties to let go of the past and focus on implementing the revitalized peace deal. Festus Mohae calls the new agreement South Sudan's only hope for achieving stability. Wake Simon Wudu has more for VOA from Juba.
At a farewell party attended by foreign diplomats and government officials in Juba Tuesday evening, the former president of Botswana did not mince words as he urged the government and the opposition to work together to rebuild the country.
One of the reasons why I am optimistic is that I think even my fellow citizens of my fellow Africans of South Sudan in the leadership must be tired of fighting. You must be tired of fighting. And therefore, I think my last recommendation to you is the simple statement that I have repeated to you, that instead of destroying, you could be building.
Mohae says he sees a promising future for the country and called on all stakeholders to focus on the future rather than dwell on the past.
Let us forget the past and concentrate on the future. I am very hopeful that the revitalized agreement, which is more inclusive for one thing, and where a number of all the sticking issues were openly discussed and at least verbally resolved, an agreement reached on the way forward, I think there is hope. I think that is why I said, well, this is a very good development and a new agreement.
Mohae says he is encouraged by President Salva Kiir's recent decision to order the release of all prisoners of war and political detainees as part of implementing the peace deal. He called on members of the international community to work together to effectively implement the agreement, adding that disunity among international partners during the implementation of the 2015 peace deal blocked efforts to pressure the South Sudanese warring parties to respect the agreement.
One time I had a campaign about speaking with one voice because I thought that the warring parties in South Sudan will listen more if the international community, including IGAD leaders, including the African Union, including the United Nations, spoke with one voice. I think they listened, but I don't think they did speak to the extent that I would have liked them to have done. And so many things went wrong.
The former Botswana president told the South Sudanese leaders the time has come to focus on reconstructing the country, not rearming their forces.
Instead of buying guns next time, buy textbooks, build classrooms for your children. Education and training is what you should be doing. Providing clean water for your citizens, building infrastructure. You are a very rich country.
At the same event, Mike Whiteley, the Church of the Affairs of the British Embassy in South Sudan, said the Troika is still waiting to see a demonstrated commitment from all parties to respect the terms of the agreement.
The Troika, while welcoming the agreements, has made clear our reservations about the party's commitment. I will not repeat them here because they've been well recorded elsewhere. But I hope those doubts are proven wrong, that deeds match the words, that the trust that needs to be built is built, that the political choices needed to be made by the different sides to this conflict are taken, that we see compromise and reconciliation sustained, that people of South Sudan deserve the chance for peace and prosperity and to return to their homes.
The African Union representative to South Sudan, Jerome Bisuaro, also wants to see a genuine commitment from the country's political leaders to implement the peace deal. Mohai said while the objective of a peaceful South Sudan has yet to be realized, he hopes the tragedy that befell this country will one day come to an end. Mohai was widely criticized by civil society groups and the SPLM-IO for what they saw as his failure to pressure the government to fully implement the 2015 agreement. It is not at all clear who will replace Mohai as the chairperson of GMEC. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
The UN Population Fund spoke to more than 4,000 young people across the globe and outlined a new report. What it identifies as a common frustration among young people towards their governments and international actors who fail to see them as partners for peace. Malwal Bolkir is part of the UN's advisory group on the issue and says the report is part of UN Security Council Resolution 2250, the first on youth, peace and security. Bol says today's youth are agents of change in promoting peace and security.
That resolution was the first ever UN resolution to recognize the potential and significant role of young people in issues to do with peace and security. So the Security Council then mandated the Secretary General of the United Nations to carry out the study, to bring out the positive contributions of young people in the promotion of peace. And then the former Secretary General, Ban Ki-moon, appointed us to advise on the development of the progress study.
And this study that you just spoke of was launched this week by the UNFPA. What sets the study apart from what is already known about the role of youth in peace and security?
The unique thing about this study is that it has set out certain recommendations. Because if you look at the way the UN or various governments and stakeholders work with young people, they often not include young people on the table. But this time, the study, it is actually a voice of young people. 4,230 young people were consulted globally, where 7 regional consultations and 6 national consultations and 471 focus group discussions were done in 44 countries. So actually the study is the voice, it reflects the voice of young people. And they talk about how they can create positive change. But the recommendations are in three ways.
What are those recommendations?
So one is to invest on young people, to invest in youth. The investment in youth, so there are specific recommendations on investment in the youth, like, for example, allocating $1.8 billion by the year 2025 and strengthening youth organizations and flexible funding. Because if you look at the UN and other donors, they are really very rigid in terms of donating to youth organizations. That's one. Two, include youth. So part of the recommendation is to also include youth in the decision-making process and to not only have youth representation, but to also have youth around the table.
You're talking about recommendations, but can you bring it to a national level? You're from South Sudan. 70% of South Sudanese are considered the youth. So what is your advice?
My advice to South Sudan, especially to the young people of South Sudan, to use some of the recommendations from this progress study and this Security Council resolution to actually claim for the right space that they deserve. Because most of the time, they are being left out, they are considered as young people. Interestingly, if you look at these recommendations, they actually speak very good for the people of South Sudan. You know, in summary, include youth, partner with youth, and invest in youth. So whether it's in South Sudan or regionally, nationally, they need to look at youth as a partner for peace, rather than, you know, most of the time where we say the youth violence is always seen as a problem. When they look at youth, they see a problem. So the good thing with this project study for the youth, young people of South Sudan is to use it and to show that actually we are not a problem to be solved, but we are a solution to the problem that we are having. And to lobby for the full implementation about some of the district recommendations within this report to make sure that there is investment in them, they are included, and they are, there is a partnership with them.
That's INBR talking to Malwal Kir, a young South Sudanese leader who works closely with the United Nations. The Washington-based Enough Project has written an open letter to the South Sudanese people. Brian Adeba is the Deputy Director of Policy at the Enough Project. We now go live to Brian to find out why the Enough Project is writing an open letter to the South Sudanese people. Brian, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Tanza. The reasons are two. One is to show that, you know, we still support escalated financial pressures on the government in South Sudan, mainly because we think that the peace deal does not have the stringent provisions that are required to arrest the grand corruption and the looting of the state in South Sudan. And therefore, the international community must maintain the pressure on the leadership in South Sudan so that it conforms to peace. We think that the provisions in the peace agreement are very weak, and they will lead the country, in fact, to the situation that it was in when the peace agreement was signed, which is conflict. Secondly, there is this misconception among people that by supporting escalated pressures that we are rooting for regime change in South Sudan. That is far from the point. The point is we actually support a systems change within South Sudan that creates, arrests corruption, puts in place good measures for checks and balances against corruption.
I mean, it's not a tradition of your organization to be writing open letters to the South Sudanese people. What I see is that you normally do a researched, you know, reports. And why this letter at this time?
Well, the truth of the matter, you're very right when you say we don't do this. It's actually not one of the things we do. But at certain points, you have to clarify your position on certain issues to sort of address concerns that people raise against your brand, against what you're doing, and also to, you know, just to create that kind of understanding about why you are doing certain things at a certain time.
Now, Brian, you are from South Sudan, and what do South Sudanese people tell you when they meet you? Are they happy with the work Enough Project is doing?
Most of the time, I think because the government has done absolutely nothing to actually fight corruption, we get considerable applause for the work that the Sentry team has done in investigating the corruption in South Sudan. Now, there's always the question of why don't you do more? And I think as a small organization with finite resources, we're not able to. But our call has always been that this should not be outsourced to organizations outside South Sudan, that this is primarily the responsibility of government. Make the anti-corruption commission do its work, make the audit chamber do its work, make the judiciary do its work, make the police do their work in combating corruption. We're not seeing that at all.
Brian, hold on your thoughts on that. We will come back to you right after this break. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, South Sudanese street children get a helping hand. Find out more when we come back after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
should men and women be able to inherit property equally?
Men and women, they have the same rights. Because these are rights. And I think rights implies to any human being.
Yeah, men and women should be able to inherit property equally because we all both have the same rights. It doesn't matter whether you're a man or you're a woman.
I think, yes, they have to inherit property equally because even when it comes to religion aspect, both men and women are equal. So I don't see the point whereby men should inherit more than women.
Men and women can inherit all the properties equally, but it again based on the cultural setting of every community.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. A Juba-based political analyst says changing the name of the South Sudan's army from Sudan People's Liberation Army, or SPLA, to South Sudan People's Defense Force, or SSPDF, will not change its negative image unless the decision is followed by reforms aimed at transforming the army from a tribal force into a conventional army that respects civilians. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba.
President Salva Kiir issued a Republican order last night changing the army's name. The order read on the state-owned SSBC Television said the new name is aimed at professionalizing the army and to reflect the diversity of South Sudan's communities. But Simon Monoja, professor of social and economic studies at the University of Juba, says while changing the name is a good gesture, the Kiir administration should have done that years ago.
The transformation here, we mean, is to retrain the soldiers, the guerrilla army, the individual army, the individualized army, into a proper conventional army, national army, one. Two, the ethnicization of the army definitely need to help to be transformed. Everybody should be able to see that their face is in the army, not a tribal army or what you may call ethnic army.
Juba resident Jessica Gune says changing the name is not enough. The army itself must change.
They are the same people, the same SPLA people, and they are the same SSPDF, the same army. So change of the name is not enough. We need the change of the behaviors of the army. They need to be trained and they need to be oriented about how to be a professional army, how to protect the civilians, and awareness for them that they are soldiers to protect the civilians. They are not soldiers to go and rape and do bad activities to the citizens.
Monoja agrees the army should do more to transform the mentality of its forces so that they respect international law and stick to their objective of protecting the country from external aggression rather than killing their own civilians.
The SPLA, SPLM should have been transformed also in terms of its mentality. You know, the guerrilla fight was different from a conventional war. And in fact, as you see in the current civil war that was done during this period, you could see the way they were behaving with the rural even communities. That's why they managed to chase away so many people into refuge.
Monoja says the comprehensive peace agreement signed in Nairobi in 2005 had given the SPLA a chance to transform itself into a professional national army, something he says would have averted the ongoing atrocities committed by individual personnel in the army.
I don't know whether it would be able to bring those elements within the army back into rethinking and probably to be retrained and reformed into a proper thinking army respecting the civil population. Their role is supposed to be defending the nation, the new nation. Their role is not to fight the people. This is the kind of army do you have for a nation? At all, not for a nation. Killing its own citizens.
But Monoja praised the SPLA for its bravery during the liberation struggle from the Khartoum regime, which brought the opportunity for South Sudanese to fight for independence in 2011. Monoja says the SPLA or SSPDF has an opportunity through the revitalized peace agreement to make necessary reforms and professionalize its force in order to restore the army's legacy. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
If you have just joined us, we have Brian Adeba, the Deputy Director of Policy at Enough Project, with us on the line. Brian, let's give credit to the government of South Sudan. There are institutions in South Sudan. There are several institutions operating there. So you were just telling me that you need them to establish system. But these institutions already have systems running.
Yeah, South Sudan does have institutions. As I mentioned earlier, you have the Anti-Corruption Commission, you have the National Audit Chamber, and South Sudan does have laws and regulations on paper. The question is not the missing, that there are no regulations or no institutions. It's the implementation. So what we have seen consistently is the erosion of the capacity of these institutions to actually hold anyone accountable. How is that done? First, they're starved of the resources that they require to enable them to do their work properly. Secondly, there is conflicting legislation. That time is the ability of, for instance, the Anti-Corruption Commission to go after anyone. There are two pieces of legislation that are incompatible that govern the Anti-Corruption Commission. You have the 2009 Act, and then you have the Constitution. So those need to be reconciled. Until now, they have not been reconciled, and the hands of the Anti-Corruption Commission are tied. Thirdly, you have the timing of these institutions is done by the appointment of cronies to head them so that they look away when malfeasance is committed. So it's not a question that these institutions are missing or the regulations are missing. It's now, the Brian, implementation.
Yes, Brian, the Enough Project in the past years has been standing with the people of South Sudan. For instance, in your open letter, you said you gave full support to the long search for peace in the North-South War and for the referendum that resulted in the birth of South Sudan. What changed?
We have not changed. We are consistently looking out for the good of South Sudan. And by consistently pointing out the anomalies in the system and pushing for the rectification of these shortcomings, we're actually standing up for South Sudan. We're still supporting South Sudan. That has not changed.
All right, Brian Adeba, thank you very much for coming into the show at a very short notice.
Thank you.
That was Brian Adeba, the Deputy Director of Policy at the Enough Project, speaking with me from Washington. A group in South Sudan is feeding street children using donated Bitcoin cash and says it plans to enroll the children in school in the capital, Juba, as well as other South Sudanese towns. Winnie Chirino has this report for VOA from Juba.
Dozens of street children jockey for space under the scorching sun as they queue up to receive food in Juba's Gudele neighborhood. Some of the children here come from the streets, while others come from various residential neighborhoods and receive food, mostly posho and beans. 14-year-old Emmanuel is one of the beneficiaries of the feeding center, an NGO called Junub Open Space. Speaking in Arabic, Emmanuel says he has lived in this area since he was a little boy.
My father died and my mother doesn't work. My mother just stays at home. Sometimes if there is nothing to cook, she goes to the bush to collect vegetables and then cooks for us. If there is no flour also, she begs from the neighbors. If there is nothing also, we come and eat from the center here. Like today, we have not cooked. I will get some food and take home and eat with my mother and younger sister. This is a place that helps us a lot.
The feeding center consists of a 50 by 100 meter open space and a metal container which serves as an office and store. Junub Open Space was registered as a national NGO last year and feeds street kids on Mondays, Wednesdays and Fridays. Emmanuel says on days when the feeding center is closed and his family has no food, he collects discarded bottles from the streets for recycling and is able to earn a little money to buy food.
I collect and there is something like 90 pounds. This is what helps us at home. If you collect a full sack, they may buy it from you at 200 South Sudanese pounds. We use the 200 to buy flour, and the balance my mother goes and buys some sauce.
Junoob Open Space depends on several volunteers like Arabic-speaking Joan Pony to cook for the street children. Pony says they cannot leave children too late on the streets, so they cook for them. Sometimes she says there are many children, other times not, but they cook the same amount of food each day. Emmanuel Obijo, executive director of Junoob Open Space, says his group uses donated bitcoins and sells them to the Ugandan company Coinbase, which deposits real money into their bank account. That money is used to buy food for the children. Lobijo says in their first fundraising drive, the group raised 13 coins or $130.
Recently, we started this humanitarian site that is feeding the street children using Bitcoin Cash. So Bitcoin Cash is a peer-to-peer electronic cash to food. It's a cryptocurrency that we use to feed the street children with. And the donation is coming from the Bitcoin Cash community. We get this Bitcoin. We sell it first to a Ugandan company called Coinbase. And then they buy these coins and then they deposit our money to mobile money. Then from there, we withdraw it now to pounds and then we buy the food items.
Lobita says most of the children they meet in the streets are not going to school.
Some of them who stay with the mother and the father, but still they find like staying at home and there's no proper support. Like not every child that has been coming here is in the school. So they're here, and because some of them they don't have like something that they'll be doing. Like, we find that most of them during daytime, they're just going to the street to go and look for where to eat. So since we started this center here, so at lunchtime, you find that they come here and then they come and eat. And then most of their times, they spend, of course, with us. We have some talk with them.
Lobijo says his group is carrying out an assessment to establish the number of street children in Juba, Bor, Yei, and other South Sudanese towns. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
8 people were injured today when 2 Sudanese military planes collided on the runway at Khartoum International Airport. Video footage posted on social media shows 2 planes moving along the runway seconds before one rams the tail of the other. Airport officials temporarily shut down the facility due to the accident. That's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song, a call by Congolese music star Fally Ipupa.
The king, the genius, el professor, école. Président des démoniato, Yves Njoli, les boucliers, Malou des bosquets, Picho Bongo, Soparon, Moukoka. Sabe Gorbi le Valois. Allez, Sigizi, 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 le Mama. Allez, Sigizi, le Junior Mapousse. Amérima, Amérima. Moi, c'est un gros fort. Tonton Lama, Balaba. Le valable pastoral, trésor Mukuna, pasteur de Niles.
We have been listening to Fally Ipupa with his latest song, A Call. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being here. If you would like to share something you've heard on this show, you can find us on Twitter. Our Twitter handle is VOA South Sudan. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Ahmed Bakayoko, fort. Aseni Marco Camara, l'homme du peuple. African Jam Sport, Didier Drogba. Le numéro 9, Samuel Eto'o.
Yaya Touré, le phénix, Rigobert Sombre, Alexandre Sombre, les snipers togolais, Emmanuel Adebayor.